What's up, everybody, and welcome to Five Red Lights, episode two, week two of the 2025 season. My name is Jesse Finver, and with me, as always, Howard Goldberg. And Howie, we had one hell of a race weekend this past weekend in Shanghai. It's a lot of highs, a lot of lows for different teams, a lot of storylines that we're going to get into this on this episode. We're going to talk about Suzuka next weekend and the Japanese Grand Prix. But first, a lot to talk about this weekend in Shanghai. And, you know, listen, Oscar winning the Grand Prix in Shanghai is definitely, you know, normally would be the biggest story of the weekend and, you know, putting 14 points on Lando. But I got to say, the thing that I wanted to start with first is your boys, the Ferrari. After having such an amazing start in the sprint, you know, Lewis getting pole and winning, going wire to wire in the sprint race, and then the disaster of the actual race itself on Sunday. Just give me your initial thoughts on what happened for Ferrari this weekend. Maybe give it a little bit of a breakdown of why they got DQ'd. I think not everybody is completely aware of why that happened. And, you know, just, you know, get right into it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a weekend of extremes for Ferrari, wasn't it? It was quite extraordinary, actually, watching Lewis Hamilton just drive away from the field. He finished that sprint race with a 7-second gap, almost a 7-second gap to Oscar, which in that McLaren was pretty impressive. And then I was seeing that they made a couple setup changes to try to optimize for the longer race. And that was puzzling to me right away because both of their cars looked incredible, both on tires and for pace in the sprint. Leclerc, he was starting to close in once he got past Yuki, and he was starting to close in on the cars ahead towards the end of the sprint. So that was a really puzzling decision for me. And then on Sunday, just nothing went right, really, except for the start, quite frankly. Both cars got a good start. They both got past Max in the first two corners. There was a little bit of contact between Charles and Lewis. Charles lost his front wing and end plate. So he lost a lot of downforce, which in theory would mean he's going to go a lot slower, have a lot more wear on his tires. And that wasn't the case. I'm not sure if the wing becoming a lot more flexible had something to do with that, or if Charles just had an unbelievable drive. But from there, it was just a meh race. They fell away from the McLarens and George Russell. And at the beginning, when they were chasing George, Lewis, the lead car, had no pace to the point that he suggested to the team that they swap positions with him and Charles, which is mind-blowing that Lewis Hamilton would do that. So I think that kind of illustrates the position they were in when the race came around. And then after the race, I mean, they did fine. They ended up in fifth and sixth when they crossed the line, but then both cars got disqualified for different reasons. It just had that feel of, oh, Ferrari, just they're doing it again.
Yep.
And it's a solid points haul. You know, they would have been comfortably third in the championship. And it was Charles got DQ'd for being underweight. And I don't think that you can point to the front wing, because under FIA regulations, you're allowed to make a like for like swap for parts. So like, if you have a damaged part and you think that's the reason you're underweight, you can put the same specification part on the car before the weigh-in after the race. So theoretically, they could have replaced his front wing if that was a concern. I think they feel like it was the tires. They weren't expecting a one stop. And this is kind of, this happened at one of the races last year.
That's super interesting, but that you bring up the tires though.
Right, because they're not the only team to do a one-stop.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're not the only one that thought it was going to be a two-stopper that ended up one-stopping. So I don't know how they found themselves in that position alone.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was pretty shocking. And then Lewis, the skid underneath the car, basically the plank that's on his underfloor.
So what is that? Can you explain? Because you sent me a video and the guy held up a note card, it's like this thin.
Yeah, that was just like to explain. I have some cards on my desk. This is a soccer card, Rasmus Højlund. But like, it's essentially like that's the difference between Lewis being able to be classified for the race or being disqualified.
Yeah.
And basically what it comes down to is on the underfloor of his car, there's a skid, a plank, a piece of wood that it's right down the middle of the car. And based on the ride height in certain parts of that track, any track really, it's going to hit the ground. And his car, I guess, was just a little bit too low and he was disqualified. Bad luck that his car was picked to be checked.
It's random. So this is not something that happens to every driver.
They pick like a quarter of, I think they pick 5 cars a race to check for that stuff.
Any given race, like somebody could be like technically have an illegal car and they just get lucky that they don't get picked.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Exactly.
Why don't they check every
unless every car? They have a cause to believe that because it's just circuit or something, they won't. But yeah, it's too time consuming. They have to get the show on the road, moving to the next city. They're going to Japan for next week, so they got to pack up and get moving. But yeah, that was stunning. I think the second biggest story of the weekend, obviously, Oscar. Oscar looked like he was fully in control of that car. He came out of that weekend with 1 point away from the maximum amount of points available. He came second in the sprint race, won the feature race, came into the weekend 23 points behind Lando in the championship. I think that needs to be mentioned. Mm-hmm. He's leaving 10 points behind it. Picked up 13 points. This was a big opportunity that Lando threw away. He only scored 1 point in the sprint.
That was the biggest thing, I feel like, with him. Like, because Oscar was pole, right? He was pole
for the race, yes.
Yeah, so he got pole and he held that down. And Lando passed George on that start, which I thought was impressive, and was like, all right, cool. Like, that's like good for Lando, like kind of making up for the disaster of the sprint. And only getting, I mean, he got 1 point out of it, but that's unacceptable for McLaren if they want to be the constructors' champion this year.
Right. Well, no, I think in that sense it's okay, but
no, just like that can't be a trend.
If you want to be the world drivers' champion, you can't be making mistakes that put these kinds of points at risk.
Yeah,
it was essentially the mistakes he made in qualifying and in the first lap of that sprint race essentially would have dropped him points wise. Essentially, he finished fourth in the race yesterday.
Yeah.
So
he's
got to just be better. And I think he knows that too. I think he realizes.
Oh, for sure.
It's something that he's trying to work on. But
it's interesting though, because what we talked about last week where, you know, Oscar has to go out and take it. If he wants to, like, with everything that we've seen, especially how his race ended last week and how he's able to get back into the points, but how he spun out and, you know, Lando had pole and he held it the whole time in Australia. And Oscar, you know, it's his home race. And we were like, if he wants, like, he should be in your home race. It shouldn't be a, hey, like, you know, let's go racing sort of thing. It's a, hey, Lando, cede this to Oscar. Like, this is his home race. You guys are neck and neck. And Oscar was faster too, right? So for him to come out in week two and be an absolute rocket ship, go wire to wire, drive away from the field. I mean, we were like, let's see it, Oscar. And that's exactly what he did. I was very impressed.
Yeah. And I think, quite frankly, Australia, his mindset there, I think made a lot of people believers that he could actually do it this year.
Mm-hmm.
And his mindset of, I'm not officially out of this race. There's still points available. He did not give up. And that was, to me, the most impressive part of that drive.
He was really good. So shout out to McLaren. And, you know, unfortunate about Ferrari, but there were a lot of other teams that we need to talk about. I think the next team we should talk about is Aston Martin. Because while we were watching this, look, to preface this a little bit, I came before the season, I was like, why is Lance Stroll still in the field? Like, what has he done to deserve being in the field still? And all he's done is score points back-to-back weeks.
All he's done is show why.
And just be a fantastic driver. Really impressive, especially with how tough of a start Fernando Alonso's had with his crash in week one. And then his car, what was it? It was a brake fire, which was interesting in the beginning of the race. Multiple drivers were just calling out things that were going wrong with other drivers' cars. Like Max was, I think Max said, Charles's wing is broken. You know, and then somebody else calls out Fernando.
That seems
to
purpose because if the FIA saw fit, they could have called Charles into the pit if that end plate stayed dangling there.
Yeah,
because that would have been a danger
for him. Coincidentally,
actually, Kimi Antonelli in turn 3 and turn 8 ran over debris that fell off of Charles Leclerc's car on the first lap, and it caused him to lose a lot of downforce, damaged his underfloor, potentially costing 0.4 per lap. So him being able to hold position the whole race is pretty impressive.
Yeah, which again, I mean, we'll get to Mercedes later.
Back to Aston Martin.
So while we were watching this race, real quick, we were watching this race, you told me, look out for Lance Stroll. He changes everything. Why did he change everything?
So he was the canary. Back when people were mining, they would send a canary down to see if the air was safe. And if the canary came back, the miners would go in. If not, they stayed up. That's essentially what Lance Stroll was for the rest of the teams this weekend. He started on the hard tires. So did Ollie Bearman, for the record. But Ollie got stuck behind Lance, so he pitted onto the mediums early. Lance stayed on the hards so long that it showed all the other teams that it was a one-stop race. And honestly, he hurt himself by doing that. And luckily, I'm very glad it happened, quite frankly, because he deserved it. Mm-hmm. And without the disqualifications, he wouldn't have gotten into the points. So it was kind of like, as a Ferrari fan, I hate to see it, but Lance Stroll definitely deserved to be rewarded for that drive and for what he's done at the beginning of this year. And I mean, kudos to him. And Fernando, he's going to turn it around. He's got so much experience, but he's just struggling right now. He finished the one race this year that he did finish the sprint. He was 13 seconds behind Lance. So there's a little work for Fernando to do. I guess this year, Lance came in feeling a little more comfortable in the car, but we'll see how it goes throughout the season.
Very impressed. I love the canary in the coal mine, comparison there. Cause I was like, how is he finishing the points? And obviously what happened with Ferrari, but that was one hell of a drive and he changed everything. And I'm rooting for him. I am. It's gone from like a, wow, he's a Nepo baby, I don't want him, to like, and you've pushed on this. You've pounded the table for Lance Stroll saying, all right, I understand like his dad owns the team, but he has been winning races. He's been racing. Like he earned this spot.
Right.
Even if his dad wasn't an owner, he could be in the F1.
Yeah. He wouldn't this long, I think is very fair to say, but he earned his spot in the sport initially. And once he got into the sport, he podiumed with Williams, podiumed with Racing Point. Like he has shown his ability multiple times. It's not a fluke. He's shown that he's talented. He's shown that he's fast. He's shown that he's capable. And has he hung around maybe a little longer than he probably should have? Yeah, maybe. But I don't think you can really look at him and say he doesn't deserve to be anywhere near that car. And I'm glad that he's showing it.
Yep. Next team we should talk about. I'm just like I didn't even take notes. It was more of like I'm just going through our running text from when I watched. Yeah. You were a savage and you stayed up to watch at 3 a.m., which cost you dearly later in the night. Williams, there are guys this year. We love Williams. We love this car. We love everything about them. The drivers, the team principal, everything. Hated the strategy this week. And I think they kind of got bit. They went into the cave too early. They breathed that air in too early. It was the race strategy. So I texted you, was like, ugh, Williams, hate their strategy. They stayed out way too long. But they got lucky with the DQs. I think they would have had 2 points without them. They ended up with 7. So that's
that's good. That's 8th, and Carlos would have been just outside the points.
Right. So they escape with some points, but I mean, you hate to see, and maybe that's just like what, maybe that's the strategy everybody was going to have, and everybody, they just didn't catch on to what Aston Martin was doing quickly enough.
I think everybody's strategy was going to look pretty similar to Lewis's.
Yeah,
Lewis and Carlos. Carlos,
he went medium,
Lewis
hard, or what did he do?
Yeah, I think Carlos and Lewis had the same, except their finishing tires. Carlos, I think, finished on mediums, but yeah, it's essentially the same thing.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, again, happy that they were getting the points. I thought their strategy was just kind of questionable.
At the same time, though, good on them for being in the spot to capitalize. When stuff happened, mean that's the name of the game, and Haas did the same thing. I mean, Esteban had a phenomenal race. He was getting solid points anyway. He moved up 2 spots because of the Ferraris, but he was gonna finish in 7th, which I mean, that's what, let's see, that's 8 points. 6 points. So, I mean, that's already a good weekend for Haas.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they came out of it with 14 points as a result is unbelievable. They're going to take that. That's going to push them forward.
No,
I think they're going to believe that they're capable of a lot more now.
Yes. And it's funny because, I mean, so... Yeah, I did say 50 miles of shit, and then then Haas, and they've made me look silly.
Standing in some shit right now.
I'm standing in some shit.
50 miles of it.
50 miles of it. Haas. They looked impressive. Ollie Bearman, probably the funniest driver on the circuit.
17th.
Yeah, and what did he end?
17th in that race. Would have been 13th, ended up 10th.
10th. And every time he passed somebody, just yelling, chow.
He ended up 10th without the disqualifications.
Right. Ended up 8th. 8th. So, I mean, that's great for Haas. Him yelling chow every time he passed somebody was fantastic. I love that so much.
Better, though, on the post-race show on F1 TV, Esteban and Ali joined the crew.
Yeah.
And Laura Winter asked him about it, saying how he was saying chow. And he was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I feel bad about that. I was just like, in the moment, I think I blacked out.
That was an
awesome moment. You love to see that kind of character on the radio. You know, it's fun.
Absolutely.
Fun for the fans. I think it's fun for the team. They were having fun with it, so.
Especially with a team that just comes in with like no expectations this season. This is a team, one of the four teams we were like, yeah, they're looking at 2026, you know. Yeah. They still are, but to get points on a difficult track, this was not an easy track. Good for them. All right, your boy Kimi Antonelli.
Yeah, we hinted at it. Kimi had some damage. So he was kind of hampered with what he could do. He struggled. You saw him struggle behind Esteban. He just couldn't get past him. And I think a lot of that comes down to the damage he was carrying. However, Esteban is known as a very good defensive driver, somebody who's hard to pass. But I think Kimi did a good job of just holding court and finishing where he started, ended up two spots up because of the disqualifications. He did what he had to do this weekend. I think the bigger yet under the radar story is his teammate, George, who
it's been
at times looked like a real threat. I mean, at the end, forget about another lap. If there were four more corners, if they go through 1, 2, 3, 4, George is in front of Lando.
I think that's so general. I think that's underselling it. I think it's two corners. He made up 9 seconds in half a lap.
Well, I say that because it's 1, 2, 3, 4 is kind of that first whole complex at the front of that lap. So it's almost like one big corner that's split up into one that's two apexes and another one that's kind of two apexes.
Okay.
But yeah, that was George has just put his head down and done his job this season. And I think Mercedes and Toto are very happy with it.
Gotta be.
And making it hard. There's a lot of chatter about Max to Mercedes in 2026. George is making it hard for them to consider moving on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so interesting. Like we talked about it in the first episode. I brought up how in Drive to Survive, they basically laid down the gauntlet for George last year. And we're like, you need to earn this spot. And he went out and he won two races. And podium a bunch. I mean, he's really stepped up to the plate. I'm very impressed with George Russell. Mercedes' car in general. We talked about it in our preview. I had them behind Red Bull. I 2 weeks in, I'm wrong. I was wrong. All right. I was wrong. The Red Bull, they're going to be in fourth this year. Maybe worse if they don't make a change soon, which I think is a good transition.
I was actually thinking about that. If both Williams can get in the back of the points and it's only Max, and considering the fact that Max is fighting two strong Ferraris and George to be the last car on the third car on the podium, for the most part, you would expect the McLarens to be fast and up there. I mean, there's points available. If Max is fighting one against two again, that could be a lot closer for fourth and fifth than anybody expects.
I think the midfield is going to be just as exciting as the top of the constructors this year.
The midfield is where the action is this year.
Yeah.
We've seen it already. We've seen Sauber surprising with points at Australia. We've seen Haas do that this week. Williams did it this week. So I think you're going to see swings in the constructors all season long.
And especially especially with upgrades coming.
Yes, I haven't seen a whole lot, but I just saw a Ferrari. I saw a post about Ferrari bringing upgrades to Bahrain, which I think is always a great spot to bring upgrades to. It's one of the testing circuits for F1 where just about every driver has the most experience there. They drive there in the junior formulas. They have the preseason testing. So, yeah, I think that people are really looking at Bahrain and saying, okay, I think this is when we really get a stock of the rookies. And so, yeah.
Why do you say that? Is there something about
just track
Bahrain?
Familiarity?
Yeah.
Track familiarity. It's one less variable for them that is unknown, you know, because at the end of the season, these rookies are still going to be getting used to their cars. They're still learning so much in Formula One every week. And for them to go to a track that they've raced around 3, 4, 5 times, they've done testing around a month ago for 3 days. So they have experience in previous cars. They have experience in the current car.
Bahrain is just a place that F2 and F3 drive a lot also. And they're just, these young drivers have a lot of experience there. Plus they do a lot of testing there as well. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Bahrain is one of the tracks every year that they have the support series.
All right. Well, this is a good transition to some news talking about rookies because Red Bull is going through a crisis right now. And I don't think that either of us, have we ever seen, and like, we've been watching for you've been watching for like 5 years or so now. I've been watching for like 3 or 4 years now. But you are locked in on this. Have you ever seen something like what's going on with Liam Lawson at Red Bull, where they're just ditching him two starts?
After two starts, no, but the situation, yes. And we've seen it at Red Bull in the last 4 years. And guess what? The two drivers that it's happened with are both wildly successful. One of them is a Grand Prix winner. One of them is helping Williams become a resurgent team on the grid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think almost any team would be happy to have them as one of their drivers right now.
So you're talking about Albon and who else?
Pierre. Yeah. And it was those two that got flip-flopped for each other. You know? And so I think Red Bull really messed up last year. You know, when they replaced Daniel Ricciardo with Liam Lawson in the V-carb, that was their chance to see if Daniel could drive the Red Bull. And I think where they're going wrong in this whole thing of trying to find a second driver is using the V-carb team as a testing ground, because the cars are absolutely nothing alike.
Yeah.
Everything you hear about, by the way, go back and listen to Alex Albon talk about that Red Bull from 2020 and 2021. That is the same way Checo was talking about it. It's the same way, like, that the people at the team working at the team talk about it. It's a car that is so on the nose that it's almost impossible to handle. But that's how Max likes it. And so you had, and actually it goes back before that, you had like Sebastian Vettel talking about the car being so on its nose. And when Daniel
Is there a Ricciardo, reason why they are doing
it's
this?
It's just how they built the car. And
what's the benefit, though?
It was designed. The harder a car is to drive, the more on a knife's edge it is. Generally, the faster it can go.
Okay.
It's just harder to control. So that's the ultimate trade-off, is speed for control.
Yeah.
Is generally how it goes in almost anything, you know? You have to have a trade-off. And when Daniel Ricciardo came in 2014, he picked it up immediately and beat Sebastian Vettel, who had just won 4 straight championships in that car. And it wasn't until Max Verstappen came along the second year that they were together that he was able to beat Daniel. And so clearly it's a car that Daniel is comfortable with, the characteristics of a car that has a very heavy front and is twitchy and hard to handle and agile. And so for them to not even consider that is really a failure. It really is. They brought him back for that specific reason and then didn't even give him a chance.
Who's that on? Whose fault is that?
Ultimately them.
No. They, like, is there an individual? Like, do you look at Christian? Do you look at,
it's Horner and Helmut.
Is it Max asking for the car to be a certain way? Is it Helmut? Like,
No, I don't. It's been working. Their car has worked. They haven't been below third in a constructors since 2017.
They've been dominant.
2016. So it's like, it's hard to really say build your car differently, but their methods of finding that second driver are just very questionable.
Yeah. Well, that leads me to that second driver question, because it looks like it's pretty much a done deal that it's going to be Yuki being brought up for as quickly as Suzuka. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, two thoughts. One, if they are going to give Liam one more chance, this might be one of the best tracks for him to get it at, for him. Just because he spent parts of last year and the year before in the Super Formula, which is the top level of racing in Japan. So he would have raced Suzuka a few times in very fast cars. Okay. So there's a level of track familiarity there. But yeah, I think he's toast. I think it's unfortunate. But they're realizing the situation that they're going to find themselves. Red Bull is going to find themselves in the same situation they were in last year with Checo, of we're fighting with one hand behind our back and we're going to lose tens of millions of dollars because of it in the constructors.
They
cannot afford to do that.
Who was the reporter that talked to Christian? Yeah. So, I mean, Kravitz straight up asked him, like, what's going on? Like, are you guys making a move? Right. Christian was very cagey. Like,
and he said he and credit to Kravitz because he pushed the subject and said, well, you didn't get rid of Checo for this, did you?
Yeah. Gotta love those Brits, right? Being just on the nose.
The exact quote was, you didn't pay off Checo for this, did you?
Yeah.
Because that's the fact. They had to pay Checo almost $20 million for him not to drive.
And can you really say
they're in a better situation now than they?
No. At least Checo would be middle of the field back, at least.
Exactly. So by not, you had a 6-race trial run for Daniel. It's take it. And after that, if you decide you want Checo back, do you really think he's going to say no?
He definitely might be a pride thing,
but. Yeah. It's a seat in one of the most exclusive sports in the world.
Probably like the most exclusive, right? I mean, yeah. Like, so.
Yeah, but I think. Lawson Dawn, yeah, like, I think Yuki.
Is it a straight swap?
No, because no. There were a lot of rumors swirling right after the race that Red Bull was going to go after Franco Colapinto, who signed over the winter with Alpine as their reserve. Was not a secret that they were interested in him last year for the V-carb seat. They talked to him. Ultimately, it was too costly to pull him away from Williams at that time. And that seems to be the case again with Alpine. It seems like that's a dead end based on what I've been seeing earlier today. And that really leaves just a straight swap. Or, very interesting, one rumor theory that I've seen is Arvid Lindblad.
Who is that?
He's a Red Bull Junior. He's currently in F2. Last year raced in F3. He's considered one of like the top talents of this generation that's coming through. Currently 17 years old. So right now, Red Bull is actually in the process of requesting one of the special waivers from the FIA,
okay,
similar to what Mercedes did with Kimi Antonelli last year. That way they can get him in a car because he does have the super license points required for Formula One. So that has been a very interesting theory. That's supposedly like Helmut Marko is supposedly like in love with this kid.
All right. So ultimately, what is your ultimate prediction with what Red Bull does for Suzuka?
Yuki in the Red Bull and Lawson in the V-carb. And I think Lawson performs well. I do.
Why?
It's an easier car to drive.
Easier car. And I mean, you've been
at. I don't think that you can say he's going to do better because there's going to be less pressure. Just because he's out of the team doesn't mean there's less pressure. It's just going to change. The pressure is going to go from, can he be close to Max, to, okay, well, now is he going to beat Isaac? He's right. Driven in that team twice. He's driven that car each of the past 2 years, Liam. So is he going to now beat the kid who's in his third race? So it's like a different kind of pressure.
And it's competition with the rookie, right?
Instead if he of doesn't do Max. Well in V-carb, I can't imagine them keeping him around very long.
He's done. Yeah. Couple other topics we wanted to talk about. Team Radio. I know you brought this up pre-show. What's going on with Team Radio? You mentioned, you know, Lewis, Ferrari's not happy with what's going on.
Red was fired up.
So talk to me about that.
I mean, he was fired up, rightfully so. I think anybody who watched the broadcast saw it. And I think you noticed it. You were like, what's going on with Ferrari? And it seemed like there was friction and they were trying to issue team orders to Lewis. And he was saying, no, I'm not letting him pass. This was all happening in the early stages, like first 15 laps of the race, when the two Ferraris were right behind George Russell. They were kind of like on the fringe of DRS range, trying to attack and get by, which at that point, everybody expected to happen, given what the sprint race resulted in. And Lewis just hit a wall. He wasn't able to make any progress. And we later came to find out after the race that Lewis came on the radio, said to the pit wall, hey guys, I'm struggling for pace. We should let Charles through. And that, first off, for a seven-time world champion to suggest, just shows he must have really been struggling for pace. And also good for him putting the team first in that situation.
Struggling for pace until the very end, when he made up like 15 seconds.
That was a kind of thing. He was just pushing all out. But anyway, they came up on traffic, so it wasn't exactly an opportune time to make that switch. So when they said, okay, how about now? He's like, no, I'll let you know when he can pass. And like, you hear that on the team radio with no context in a broadcast, you're just like, whoa, what's going on at Ferrari?
Right.
So I understand their anger. And for Formula One management to just be, they claim that they had no intent to do anything like this, that quite frankly is a little hard to believe. If there's no intent, it doesn't happen. I'm sorry, it just doesn't. Do you think I'm wrong there?
No, I mean, I think that there's decisions are always made. Like there's no way that somebody was just like
I don't think it was maliciously done, but you have to have,
I think that they have, I think that some, it's kind similar of awareness to, I think that it's
this
similar.
Sounds bad for the team. You have to have an awareness of this doesn't sound great for the team. And you can't say that you don't know that as you're publishing that.
They want this to be a drama, a soap opera, like it's like Drive to Survive, right? They kind of like, they insert sound and shots of like races that just like weren't part of the race that they were talking about just to make it look better. And they're trying to tell a story, and it wouldn't surprise me if there were the higher up people that are just like, we want drama. And so if there's any drama that you could stir up, kind of like under the radar, you know, like telling them, like,
it's a media company, Liberty Media,
careful,
like Formula One.
Yes. So they definitely want drama. They want, stories, and this is a way.
My take is there's already plenty of drama.
Yeah,
you don't have to go manufacturing it, especially
Ferrari's doing enough.
Especially not last week in Australia. They created out of nothing controversy between Lewis and his engineer because of their radio messages.
Yep,
and so for it to happen 2 weeks in a row. I totally get it. I totally get Fred Vasseur saying this should be off limits. You guys need to do better. And yeah, I understand.
Ferrari is doing enough on their own to create plenty of drama and intrigue. They don't need, you know, Formula One management picking and choosing sound bites to up the drama. Like there's already going to be drama. Whoa, my camera just did something crazy. Yeah,
close up.
I don't even know how to. How do I? All right, this is
just like clap once. No, I just wanted you to look ridiculous. Anyway,
well, we're just gonna keep this, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. I'm just gonna keep this in the podcast because I don't know how to fix this in the moment. Maybe I go like this.
I don't know. Anyway, another thing that I wanted to talk about from this weekend is just Max. He's a machine, he's a robot, he's in the eighth wonder of the world. Like, I don't know. Like, just right before we started recording this, actually, I saw a video of him testing a GT car, and it was his first time in the car. His first time in the car, and he gets in, and they have a camera in the garage, and one of the other drivers goes over to the engineers, and he's just like, "Oh, this is going to be ridiculous," talking about the lap time. And the engineer goes, "How do you know that?" And he goes, "It's max." And then it cuts back to the in-car camera. He crosses the line, and the engineer sees that and just goes, "That's crazy." And they cut away to like kind of like a testimonial shot, and the engineer is sitting there like, it was unbelievable. Like, he was finding gains every lap that usually aren't possible in real life. Like, he basically said he's doing video game stuff. Yeah. And he finished it out by saying, "Ultimately, I just reminded myself, this is the type of thing that you tell your friends about one day in a bar."
Yep.
And it's just like, that's Max. That is, when you're watching him, there's not really words to describe what you're seeing. All of a sudden, he just came alive at the end of that race. And I used to be one of the people that couldn't stand him. I realized, I'm thankful that I was eventually able to separate him and Red Bull Racing.
Yeah.
Because I still don't really like Red Bull Racing as an organization, but I'm glad that I'm now able to appreciate what we're watching with Max, because he is so far high and above, like, I think really anybody but Lewis in just natural talent.
Yep. It's incredible to watch him. I said last week, like, I was rooting for Max when I first started watching Formula One, because I just, you know, Mercedes was the dominant team, and he was the guy that was like, he had the best chance. So I've liked him. I love his competitive fire, his energy. He's hilarious, not intentionally hilarious, but he's hilarious on the radio. And he just exudes greatness. There's just something about Max Verstappen. And I guess, you know what that something is? It's the winning. It's the winning. All he does is win. It doesn't matter.
He's also just unbothered by the silly things.
Yeah.
He's
singularly focused. It's very reminiscent of like a Michael Jordan, you know, or a Lewis, right? Just like somebody who is just focused on greatness and doesn't have time. They're not messing around with any of the extracurriculars. Like, when Max is not racing in a Red Bull car, he's online racing. You know, it's his whole life.
Yeah.
And it's all he cares about. He's focused on greatness. And I think that should be celebrated, and it should be appreciated. And not like, I think that you make a good point. People need to be able to separate Max from Red Bull. Red Bull as an organization, yeah, you know, I mean, the stuff with Christian, with the allegations, and just Christian just comes off as just like a swarmy, you know, rich guy, like he's married to a Spice Girl, like, just, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of his. I don't think really anybody is. And
to be fair, I think most of the key figures in this sport are pretty unrelatable to the average person.
Yeah, I mean, Toto and his wife,
just because of status.
Like,
but yeah. I think there's definitely, they've found ways to stay likable.
My camera's doing crazy things right now. But yeah, I agree. I think that it is hard to relate to anybody involved in F1, if we're being honest. It's just, who can you relate? Like, we do our best, you know, like, we can't relate to any of these athletes. We're not genetically gifted and rich and whatever. But we love the sport, and we can appreciate greatness and what we're watching. And I think that people need to appreciate Max Verstappen more and what he's been able to accomplish so far and what he's going to continue to do moving forward.
That is also why Drive to Survive was so important for the sport. Even if you can't fully relate, getting to know them is huge.
like Daniel Ricciardo, I think, was just so big for the sport. And I think that he's one of the most important figures in F1 history because of what he was able to do in terms of a relatability standpoint, his comedic timing, his likability, you know, going on these national talk shows, you know, seeing him on the Tonight Show, all these things. And, you know, if you threw Max Verstappen next to Jimmy Fallon or Jimmy Kimmel, it's just not the same as throwing Daniel Ricciardo up there. It would be an awkward conversation, but Daniel, he's a natural, and he was the face of, I mean, he's everybody's favorite driver for a reason, pretty much, because he's just hilarious and he's fun and you can relate to him, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Last thing I kind of want to touch on here is Lando and Oscar. And we started talking about it a little before, but, and I'm not trying to crush him because he's still one of the best drivers on the grid, but Lando is still making too many mistakes, and they're at critical times and they're too costly. And when he has a driver like Oscar in the same car as him, ready to take advantage, you can't be doing that. You just can't. And it's something people have said about Lando for a long time. It's why he didn't have his first win 4 years ago.
Yeah.
He lost so many points this weekend. If he had a chance to really like kind of take charge of that team here and then another strong showing in Suzuka, he could have come out of Suzuka potentially like 35 points ahead of
Oscar. Do you think that there's conversations happening at McLaren right now about who, not just who the future of the team is? Because I don't think they have plans to move on from Lando anytime soon. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, do you think that going into this season, I think the prevailing thought with McLaren was going to be, all right, Lando, this is you were in second last year. This is your turn, your time to win the drivers' championship.
Yeah. It was almost like, and, given we have the car, it's his to lose almost.
Right. And now you see what Oscar is doing, and Oscar needs to continue to do it. But if Oscar continues to get poles and win races, eventually it's almost like it's not the passing of the torch. They're both still so young, but it can't just be a given that if Lando's in first, or Lando's in second and Oscar's in first, like, you're not going to just, if you're Zach Brown, you're not going to be like, Oscar, you got to switch spots. You know, it's all right, we're in a good space here. Both these guys are in contentions to win the drivers' championship. And you know what? We're going to let our guys race and see what's up. And eventually, I think throughout the season, they're going to have to make a decision, because if they keep on swapping wins, that leaves it vulnerable for another team to swoop in, another driver to swoop in and win the drivers' championship. But I think that as of now, I mean, we're only two races in. If you're Zach, you got to be like, all right, like, this is up for grabs. Which one of you guys wants to be the team leader here?
Yeah. Right? And I mean, my take on it, I think Oscar came into this year with something to prove. And I think he came into this year with a fire. And if he can improve his qualifying, Lando's going to really struggle. Because last year, Lando out-qualified. Well, because last year, he started behind Lando he started behind Lando 16 times.
Yeah.
A quarter of those times, he passed him and finished ahead of him on the road. That says something about his race pace.
Yeah.
So,
who do you think the better driver is? I feel like the answer is kind of obvious.
I think Oscar.
Yeah.
I think Oscar hesitates less in decisive moments.
Yep. I think that he is more naturally, I don't know about naturally talented. I just think that he has the standard that I have right now is who, like, it's Max and Lewis and everybody else. Who has that killer mentality? And I think that Oscar has a killer mentality way more so than Lando.
I'm not going to disagree with that. I'm not going to say Lando doesn't have it, though, because right, you need it to win. But I think what happens with Lando, I think he loses focus sometimes. I think he just, like, drifts sometimes when he's in the cockpit, and it leads to a mistake here and there.
He just gets too comfortable?
No. it's just, I don't know. I just think he loses focus.
That's, I mean, I feel like that's like pretty unacceptable for,
I don't know what the other explanation is.
Yeah. Well, we're going to, this is one of the biggest stories of the season to keep an eye on, this battle. We talked about it last week, as can Oscar make this interesting? And Oscar has already made it interesting. I think that Oscar has firmly planted himself as a contender for the Drivers' Championship after 2 weeks.
I don't think it's crazy to call him a favorite.
Yeah?
I really don't.
All right. Well, that would be certainly something. Heading into the season, everyone thought it was Lando's to lose. And if Oscar is the guy, if Oscar is who, if Oscar is him, if he's who we think he is.
Oscar knows how to win championships. One F3 and F2 in back-to-back years. Stormed right through.
Yeah. It would be pretty incredible if he was able to pull it off this year. I think McLaren still has the best car. You saw it yesterday. You saw it on Sunday with how many times. I guess Saturday also, like Lando being able to get back into the points and Lando passing George at the start and maintaining that. And that car is definitely the best. And Oscar being able to pull away. But I'm fascinated to see how this battle between Lando and Oscar heads up. And to be honest, it's not even the most interesting storyline of the season, which is crazy. There's so many awesome storylines that we got going. Let's talk about Suzuka real quick. What are your expectations? And give me a prediction.
You know, I actually didn't think about this beforehand, so this is all going to come on the spot.
On the spot.
So, predictions, I think McLaren's the class of the field there.
What kind of track is that?
It's a high-speed track. High-speed corners, flowing corners. They have just the one DRS zone on the start-finish straight. But, yeah, you have the S's. It's going to – McLaren has, for a long time, has had high-speed characteristics. Like, high-speed corners have been a strength, even when their car was – bad in like 2017 to 2021. But yeah, I think they're the team to beat. I think Ferrari and Mercedes are going to be very close behind them, like to each other. And then I think it's going to be Red Bull.
Now,
Max always has a chance to mix.
Max is going to be up there.
He'll be somewhere in there, but in terms of raw pace, Red Bull, I think, has the fourth car there.
Yeah. And, I mean, we'll see how Max does in quali. I feel like it's going to be pretty consistent. Like, he's going to be, like, 3-5. I mean, I'm sure he'll get a pole at some point. You know, we'll see what happens with upgrades and everything. I want to know, so you say it's going to be, you predicted earlier it's going to be Yuki. How do you think he does if he gets in this new car? I feel like it's not a guarantee he's going to be great. Like, this is like you've been talking about it all episode. It's a really hard car to drive.
Do you think? Yeah, here's where it gets really tricky, because you always hear about these tests that their drivers do in the Red Bull, the RB19, the RB20, which are the recent iterations of the car, and by all accounts, everything goes fantastic. Like, Liam Lawson had glowing tests in the car. Yuki Tsunoda at Abu Dhabi last year had a glowing test in the car after the race. So, like, I really don't know what to think. You really don't. I would love to say that Yuki's going to be able to handle it, because it's his home race, and you would absolutely hate to see something like that happen, given that you feel if he shows up in the V-carb, he's probably comfortably a top 10 driver there.
Yeah.
So, especially given that he's done thousands of laps around that track in his life. I think ultimately he's a Q3 guy, finishes top 10. I have faith in Yuki.
Is there any surprises we should be on the lookout for this week? I know, again, this is all off the cuff here, but anything that you are excited about as my camera does something crazy once again? It was all over the place this week. When you're watching on YouTube, you're going to see it, and you're going to be like, what is going on?
I'm curious to see if Alpine can get its first points of the season. Right now, it's the only team on the grid that hasn't scored. So curious to see that. Curious to see if the Racing Bulls can actually put a race together, because they've shown great pace in just about every session we've seen this season. They've shown very good pace, but their strategies keep undoing them. So really want to see if the Racing Bulls can put a whole race together too.
It'd be interesting to see, especially with if they do the swap. I mean, who knows? So I can't wait. It's going to be a great race. And I think that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. I guess my prediction for Suzuka is McLaren's going to win. I know, I'm really going out on a limb.
Which one do you think? I think it's going to be Lando there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm going to go Oscar. I think Oscar is something to prove, continue to prove. And I think he's really going to try and take the reins on this driver's championship. And I guess it wouldn't be taking the reins. It would be more of like planting his flag and giving himself an opportunity to plant his reins or take the reins.
I think it's Lando's very good at the very fast tracks. I think it's similar to Miami in that sense. Obviously not in layout, but I think they're both very quick circuits. So
I can't wait.
Rate Lando there.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's gonna be a great race, and I'm very interested to see how Yuki does and what car he drives in. I'm hoping it's a Red Bull for his sake. I'd love for him to get a shot. So that's it for Five Red Lights this week. Thanks for tuning in, folks. We are now on Spotify. We're working on Apple. We're trying to figure out Apple. Hopefully we'll get to Apple, but we are certainly on Spotify, and we are on YouTube. So make sure you subscribe, you like, you comment. 5 stars, all that jazz. And thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Peace.